You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about over the next hour here on this Thursday afternoon. We'll be wondering whether these rumours coming out of the Italian press are true. Could Massimiliano Allegri be replacing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as the Manchester United manager? We'll also be focusing on Bournemouth, Leicester and Newcastle this afternoon, talking about some of the latest injury news coming out of various clubs in the Premier League. Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. Remember, if you want to share your views here on Love Sport, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Obviously, the Premier League is back in full swing this weekend after the international break. Even though we've fallen back in love with the English national side, maybe not in Prague last Friday, but we still missed the Premier League during the international break. We're just a couple of days away from the Premier League being back. Some pretty big fixtures. The tastiest of them all is at Old Trafford on Sunday afternoon. It's Manchester United up against Liverpool. Liverpool won 8 from 8, currently topping the Premier League table. Manchester United 2 points above the relegation zone. So we'll have plenty more reaction to that, as well as those rumours coming out of the Italian press at the moment, linking Massimiliano Allegri with a move to Manchester United. Just going through some of the injury news as we build up to this weekend's action. Some positive news for Arsenal fans is the news that French forward Alexandre Lacazette could be in line for a return on the Monday night football. It's a tough game for Arsenal away at Bramall Lane up against Chris Wilder's Sheffield United, but the Frenchman could be on his way back to a return on Monday night. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has made a pretty good start to the season, but could Lacazette be making his return from injury on Monday night? Not such good news for Everton fans. In general, things are not going very well for them at all at the moment. Currently in the bottom three. So on the field, not going particularly well. And one of their big summer signings is set to have a long period out of the team. Jean-Philippe Bamont is set to be out until January. He's had surgery on an injured thigh. He signed for £25 million from Mainz over the summer. He's only played a couple of games in August and is set for an extended period on the sidelines. And also for Manchester United, ahead of a massive game on Sunday, not just for the team, but for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well. The news that David De Gea could be ruled out for a couple of months, an injury that he picked up on international duty. And also Paul Pogba is out of that game on Sunday as well, although that is not as serious as the David De Gea injury has been closing in on a return. But the big news coming out of Italy over the last couple of days is the news that potentially Massimiliano Allegri could be the man to replace Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as the new Manchester United manager. I'm sure our next guest will have plenty of views on that and an update on whether these rumours are true. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Chloe Beresford, Italian football expert. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Chloe. So I suppose the first question we have to ask, is there any truth in these rumours coming out of the Italian press that Allegri could be the next Manchester United manager?
I have to issue a note of caution with these reports, because they came from a Turin-based newspaper called Tutto Sport, which they have a tendency to produce rumours that are overinflated, if I'm being kind. If I'm not being kind, you know, they're not always particularly accurate. They've said things like Messi is joining Inter and, you know, rumours like that. So I would say, just to take it with a pinch of salt, although, you know, it is an appointment that probably does make sense for Manchester United at some point.
Do you think it makes sense from his point of view? Obviously, he spent many a year at Juventus having huge amounts of success. Obviously, Manchester United is still one of the biggest clubs in world football, but they're in a pretty dire state both on and off the field in terms of the hierarchy as well as on-field performances. So would Allegri be looking at this and thinking, actually, if Manchester United were in a slightly better state, then it would be a kind of much more enticing proposition? But at this moment in time, is it that enticing for a manager of the quality of Allegri?
I think it's a difficult one because United are obviously still a huge presence, still got a massive following, and you know they make the headlines even when they're not winning leagues like they used to be. I think from Allegri's point of view, he has to choose his next move very carefully. He's come from a situation, like you say, where he's won 5 league titles and 4 league cups. During his 5 years at Juve, and I guess he could take his pick, really. If he fancies a bit of a challenge and to prove that he can do a bit of a rebuild job at United, then, you know, it makes sense. And it just depends, really, on what he wants to do. Does he want another challenge, or does he want to go for a club, you know, at the very, very top level?
Do you think that the type of manager that Max Allegri is, do you think he's the type of manager that fits the bill for Manchester United, is an ideal manager to take them forwards, to take them really to another level and to kind of take them away from this average position where they are now to back to challenging top four? Manchester United fans are so used to them challenging, winning titles. But is he the right type of manager that if he was given time, 2 or 3, 4 years and a number of transfer windows, is he the type of man that Manchester United fans could start getting excited about moving their way back up towards the top four and then eventually up towards the top two in City and Liverpool?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's never taken charge of a side that was particularly in disarray before. He was at Milan and then obviously Juve. But I think he's the kind of, obviously he's got the quality to take United back to where they need to be. And he's also, he's very sensible in his approach. He won't let the media spotlight bother him. He'll take a very sort of step-by-step approach to rebuilding. And he will, you know, he'll just sort of get on with the job. He's not, although he's had a lot of success, he's not super fancy. He doesn't necessarily play the most exciting football at times, but he puts the focus very much onto winning. And that's what United need. They need to put the results together to climb the table. So in that respect, he'd be an excellent fit for them.
There have been a couple of Juventus players that have been linked ultimately that kind of come with this tie of Massimiliano Allegri, Emre Can and Mario Mandzukic. Do you think, irrelevant of whether Allegri becomes the next Manchester United manager or not, that this Mandzukic rumour was around in the summer, it's continuing, do you think it's pretty likely that he will sign in January for Manchester United, irrelevant of whether Allegri is his new manager at United?
Yeah, it seems like a credible rumour. I've seen today that he has also been linked with a move to AC Milan, but it would seem to me like a move to United would make the most sense. I've written about him this week, actually, and talked about the fact that he is a real battler and a warrior. He doesn't care what anyone else thinks. He scored goals in the World Cup final, in the Champions League final. You know, he's over 30 and he's maybe not the kind of big star signing that United fans are used to, but I think he's the player they need right now that will take the game by the scruff of the neck. He'll work hard for the good of the team, and he's not bothered about sacrificing his own personal glory for the good of the results. So I think it would be fantastic if they could get hold of Mandzukic in January.
Let's talk about a few Manchester United players that have gone over to Serie A over the summer. Alexis Sanchez obviously has joined Inter Milan on loan, but he's picked up an injury, quite a serious one, on international duty for Chile around 3 months. Will Manchester United be starting to get a little bit worried in terms of a transfer fee that they might sell him on for, with this injury and how disappointed will Inter Milan be that they didn't really get much out of him and he's going to be out for a lengthy period of time now?
Yeah, obviously it's a blow for both United and Inter. There were big things expected of him. It was kind of like, along with Lukaku, it was a fresh start for him. And now he's sustained this injury. It's all very uncertain. And United, obviously, he's not going to go back there. It was a complete failure and he's on big wages. So they really need to offload him. And, you know, Inter are looking to challenge Juve for the title this year. So they really needed a player like Sanchez that could work alongside Lukaku. So, yeah, it's a lose-lose situation, really, and must be frustrating for the player himself after he'd only just broken into the Inter team.
And just finally then, Chloe, you mentioned Romelu Lukaku's name there. How much will both Solskjaer and Manchester United regret letting Lukaku leave over the summer, considering he's made a fairly solid start to life in Milan, and also Manchester United have been left very short up front, not just in terms of the players they have, but also the injuries they've suffered to kind of expose those frailties?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, I think the improvement in form with Lukaku is to do with moving away from a situation that seemed to have gone really bad for whatever reason. So obviously they're going to look and think, oh, you know, should we have kept him? But if they'd have kept him, I don't think he would have performed like that. So it's a kind of a catch-22 sort of thing. But he's doing really well at Inter. He said he loves playing for Conte. But, you know, the fact United have let him go is probably indicative of the larger problems that are going on there. And it just became a situation where he couldn't carry on. So while they wish they might wish that they hadn't let him go in the first place, I don't think he would have performed like that if he had stayed.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Chloe. That was Chloe Beresford, Italian football expert, giving us the lowdown on these Allegri to Manchester United rumours. Tutto Sport, not necessarily the most reliable of sources over in Italy. The Italian media tend to throw out all sorts of wacky rumours. I'm sure Manchester United fans would be pretty delighted. It'd be a phenomenal appointment, Allegri. But how much truth is in there, I don't know. Obviously, he is free. He's available. He's kind of taking a sabbatical after finishing as the Juventus manager. So he is free and available. They wouldn't have to pay compensation to a club. But maybe these rumours are a little bit far-fetched coming from Italy. Mandzukic does look likely that it could happen in January for Manchester United, although they might regret letting Romelu Lukaku leave over the summer to go to Inter Milan, considering how light they are up front for Manchester United. Just one quick one. Obviously a number of the press conferences coming in today from some of the Premier League managers as we return to the Premier League this weekend. Mauricio Pochettino obviously is starting his press conference, talking about who is in and out of his Spurs side ahead of their game against Watford on Saturday. Christian Eriksen could be absent on Saturday after suffering a dead leg during international duty with Denmark. Hugo Lloris obviously is out for a long period of time with a dislocated elbow. Giovanni Lo Celso and Ryan Sessegnon are back in full training, but they are both expected to not play in that game on Saturday. Up next, we'll be continuing to look ahead to the Premier League action returning this weekend, and we'll be talking all things Bournemouth next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to share your views this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Obviously, the Premier League is back this weekend after a couple of weeks of the international break. Obviously, there is one more international break to come in November, but about five-game Premier League stretch now. It doesn't seem to last very long before we head into another international break. Looking up and down, obviously, the Premier League table as it stands at the moment. Obviously, Liverpool sat right at the top. 8 wins from 8, looking to tie Manchester City's all-time record of 18 consecutive wins in the top flight on Sunday against Manchester United. The other three top four spots are held by Manchester City in second on 16 points, Arsenal in third on 15 points, and Leicester City in fourth on 14 points. Then down into the bottom three, Everton are in 18th place. They're on 7 points, going through a bad run. 4 losses on the trot for Everton. They're on the worst run of any side in the Premier League over the last four games. As I said, four straight defeats for the Merseysiders. Norwich City in 19th, although we spoke to Chris Reeve yesterday from the Talk Norwich City podcast, and he felt that things weren't too bad, actually, and that things will pick up. They'll get players back from injury, and defensively they will be more sound after a 5-1 drubbing against Aston Villa before the international break. And Watford still sat at the bottom of the table without a win so far, conceded 20 goals in their first eight games and only scored four. So Kike Sanchez Flores looking for his first win in charge back in his second stint at the Hornets, and they travel to Tottenham tomorrow afternoon looking for that first win of the new season. We're going to be talking a little bit about Bournemouth now, who currently sit 10th place in the Premier League table, so slap bang in the middle. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Peter Rutzler, Bournemouth reporter for The Athletic. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Peter. If we just assess Bournemouth in general, their last five games, two wins, a draw and two losses, 11 points from the first eight games, is the kind of the way of summarising Bournemouth's season so far is a case of inconsistency, and they haven't managed to get a run going.
Yes, inconsistency for sure. That's very Bournemouth, isn't it, really? Now, last month was very good, actually. I mean, they picked up a win against Everton, a good draw against West Ham, and obviously a historic win at Southampton too. So it felt like there was some momentum building, and then obviously went to Arsenal and lost. So it feels like they're sort of halfway. We haven't yet really seen the best of Bournemouth. I mean, the wins they have picked up, they've performed well in stages, but there's still that sense of, you know, there's another level for them to reach. You know, we want to see them making their mark, putting their mark on matches a lot more and controlling them. And I think that's sort of a residual sort of frustration that they can't quite get that consistency week in, week out. But, you know, the signs are there that they can push on. I think it does feel like we're at sort of a turning point for them still. But we said that after the last international break as well. You know, they had a mixed start. And so we'll see, really. But yeah, on the main, it's quite positive because of that run last month. And then, you know, the Arsenal results. Yeah, it's at Arsenal. So they didn't get hammered, which they normally do. So there is a sense, you know, they're on the cusp of maybe progressing again.
In that game that you mentioned against Arsenal just before the international break, it was 1-0. To the Gunners. Was there a sense coming out of that game from Eddie Howe that there was an opportunity missed there, that Bournemouth could have really got something out of that game and they were perhaps unfortunate to take nothing out of that game?
Yeah, absolutely. There was, again, we've seen this at different times during the season where we've seen two sides to Bournemouth, you know, what they're capable of, and then another side which sort of has handicapped them. And that was very much the case at Arsenal. It was a game of two halves. I mean, the first half was dreadful. Probably one of the worst halves that Bournemouth have played this season. They were sloppy in possession. They couldn't keep the ball. There was not enough movement in midfield. And the players came out afterwards and said, you know, we showed Arsenal too much respect. And then we saw in the second half what they can do. You know, they dictated the game for the most part. Probably should have scored. They didn't create enough, which would be frustrating. But, you know, Arsenal barely laid a glove on Bournemouth, really. They had, I think, Aubameyang hit the post in the second half as Bournemouth, you know, became stretched. They tried to chase the game. But, you know, in the first half, there weren't that many chances. I don't think Aaron Ramsdale was tested. And the goal they conceded was so poor. It's from a corner, David Luiz, relatively unmarked, and he just knocks it in. And, you know, there's a sense that, yeah, for sure, that was a missed opportunity, really, because Arsenal were not at their best. And, you know, if Bournemouth had played like they did in the second half and the first half, then, you know, you're looking at a result for sure. But again, it's ifs and maybes, and it's all about putting that into 90 minutes and finding that consistency week in, week out.
One thing that must be concerning Eddie Howe at the moment is this ongoing injury that David Brooks is currently suffering from. He was ruled out for 3 months with an ankle injury sustained in July. Now, reading some of the comments from his national manager, Ryan Giggs, suggesting his return is looking around November. How close is David Brooks to a return to first team action, and will it not be as simple as once he's back he's going to go in? Because obviously, having been out for a long time, it's surely going to have to be a gradual easing back in, gradual transition back into the first team.
Yeah, I think the last update we had on Brooks was that he was in the gym, so not quite on grass. I imagine he might be back on grass and he might be training with the group, but we'll find out tomorrow from Eddie. Yeah, he suffered that ankle injury in pre-season. I think it was against Lyon, if I remember rightly. He rolled his ankle. He was out for 3 months. And we're expecting him back soon. But as you say, it's not going to be straightforward. He's not going to go straight back into the side, because Bournemouth do now have quite good squad depth. It's why Fraser, you know, hasn't. I mean, he's had an illness and a slight knock as well. But Eddie Howe now has options. He's got Dan Juma, who's come back from injury. Harry Wilson is playing okay. There are options. Josh King has gone out onto the left hand side, and Solanke's come central. So he has plenty of options at his disposal, and it's not going to be straightforward for Brooks to walk back into the side. But I'm sure he'll build up his minutes slowly, and it's not too far away now. I think I think he's over the worst of it. He's now back working towards his return, and we should see him in the coming weeks.
I've been reading up over the last few weeks on news that plans for a new training ground for Bournemouth have been approved. The club have had submitted revised plans for the facility on the 57-acre former Canford Magna Golf Club site. How big a boost and how big a step forward is this for Bournemouth in terms of, not that long ago they were kind of out of the Premier League, not really seen as a particularly big club, but now they're established in the Premier League, doing a good job with a good young manager that's got a good group of young players. How big a step forward is this to potentially build this new exciting training facility?
Oh, it's massive. It's massive for the club because, you know, you want something to show from your time in the Premier League. As you say, I mean, the 5 years they've had have been incredible, but Eddie's been pushing for this. It's all about showing that ambition and a legacy. You know, you want a legacy from the time at the top, from the revenue they've generated and helping establish the roots for the future. The training ground was something that they've wanted and needed for some time. I think they bought the site about 2 years ago. They got initial planning permission, then they altered the plan slightly to bring it all closer together rather than the original setup, which had I think had been pitched separate, which meant that they may have been walking across a car park or something like that. They then brought it back together. They've finally been accepted. That will go through, and they can now start constructing it. And, you know, for a club like Bournemouth, you want the facilities, you want the options for the future. You know, Eddie Howe may not be there forever. They may not be in the Premier League forever, but you want something that can help, you know, be a backbone to their future success, that can keep them at this level. They're currently training at King's Park, just behind the Vitality Stadium. They've got great facilities, but, you know, it was constructed quite quickly. It's quite small. The academy is separate. They play matches in Camford. And having everything under one roof, the players from the youth team to the first team, it makes such a difference, especially for their ambitions with the academy. They want to challenge Southampton on that south coast and improve their recruitment options. And that's all part of it. I mean, their academy is currently Category 3. They can't move up to a Category 2 because they don't have the facilities. But this training ground should hopefully allow them to do that. And it's all part of the larger project. You know, they want to leave a legacy from their Premier League time. It's something Eddie Howe has been determined to get. It will certainly help from a training perspective, from attracting players as well. It's such an important thing for the club. And now that they've got permission, they can press ahead and get construction underway.
And just finally, Peter, looking ahead to the game after the international break, it is Norwich at home on Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff. Norwich have shown glimpses of a side that could really compete at this level, having been promoted from the Championship. But at home, do you reckon Bournemouth fans will be heading to the Vitality on Saturday pretty confident of taking all 3 points?
I think Bournemouth fans in general, when they go to Vitality, are quite confident. I mean, Norwich are an interesting side. They've come up and they're trying to stick to their philosophy, and it's worked. But naturally, there will be some teething issues, and it will take time to make those tweaks and make it work in the Premier League, which was similar to what Bournemouth did, really, when they came up. You know, they stuck to their guns. They stuck to what they knew best. They stuck with the playing staff that they had, and, you know, it worked. And I think Saturday is an interesting contest. You know, the Norwich are shipping goals, a lot of goals, and Bournemouth tend to score off their few goals as well. I think for Eddie Howe, it's a question of, can we tighten up? They're desperate for that clean sheet. They haven't had one since May against Tottenham. So it's a long time coming, and they will want to see improvement at that end. But, you know, both teams are attacking sides. Both teams will go for it. And I, as with every Bournemouth game, you expect goals. But yeah, it's an important one for Bournemouth. They want to, you know, make a mark and push ahead and come back from the Arsenal defeat and get back to winning ways.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Peter. That was Peter Rutzler, Bournemouth reporter for The Athletic. Bournemouth back in action on Saturday afternoon at the Vitality Stadium. They're at home against Norwich, the 3 o'clock kickoff. If you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. You can also WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll be back after this.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to share your views on your Premier League club, call us on 0208 7020558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking all things Leicester now, and I'm delighted to say that we're joined by James Sharp, sports reporter for The Mail on Sunday. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, James. I wanted to get your views on this James Maddison situation. Obviously, he was called up to the England squad, pulled out with illness, was then pictured in a casino while England were playing against the Czech Republic. Do you think that he's being harshly treated, or do you think that he acted in a way that was quite unprofessional and therefore has received a lot of criticism justly?
First of all, hi, and thanks for having me on. On Maddison, I can see it from both sides. He pulled out with illness, and with the idea being that they wouldn't want him to maybe infect the rest of the players with small illness. That doesn't necessarily mean that he should be bed bound and not go and live his life as he wishes to. So I think, in respect of the stories that came out saying he's jeopardising his England career and it's awful behaviour from him, I don't really think that is fair criticism, because it's not like he was injured. He had a slight illness that wouldn't allow him to play. However, I do think possibly not the wisest of moves, because of the kind of spotlight that Premier League footballers are in nowadays. And for someone like Maddison, who is seen as this kind of flashy player, we've seen the backpacks he comes to games in. That's not a bad thing. He's still the kind of player he is. But then the perception of him, then when he's seen in the casino, he's always going to attract criticism because of it. And so I think perhaps it was unwise for him to do it. I don't think it should spell the end or mark the end of his England career. And I don't really see it as being hugely unprofessional.
Let's then talk about Leicester in general. They're fourth on 14 points after these first eight games of the season. We were discussing this yesterday about how many, for example, Leicester players would get into the Manchester United team at this current moment. I think there'd be quite a lot. So are Leicester fully deserving of their place in this top four and being one of the kind of fancied sides to secure either that third or fourth spot based on the quality of their starting 11 as well as their squad?
Well, Man U apparently want to buy all of Leicester's players anyway, so that would suggest that they probably would get into Man United's team. And I think they would. A lot of them would get into that team. I think Ndidi would get in. I think Chilwell would get in. I think probably Vardy would get in. Maddison would get in. Which is why I think Leicester fans were frustrated and disappointed that they got beaten at Old Trafford. And I think that disappointment shows how far Leicester have come and what the ambitions of the fans and excitement of the fans are. So I think even though they're fourth at the minute, there is a sense that Leicester's let points go, which means that there is kind of a belief that they could be doing even better than they are doing now. And having watched them play and seeing the sense that there is more to come, I think there's no reason why Leicester can't nail down that top four position, especially when you look at the other teams. Similarly to when they won the title, a lot of those big teams were either in transition or in real struggling positions. And I think that is the case now, where we see with the likes of Arsenal and Chelsea and United all going through transitions of managers, change of managers, changes of philosophy. And I think this is a really good season for Leicester, who have built really well, now got a top manager there, can take advantage of that. And I think we've seen it so far this season. And if they can keep up the way they're playing and maybe push to that extra level, I'm confident that Leicester can nail down a position in the top four.
Looking ahead to the weekend's action, then Leicester return to action against Burnley at home on Saturday afternoon. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff. How do you think this is a game that is kind of a foregone conclusion that Leicester will secure all 3 points, or will Leicester fans be slightly concerned by Sean Dyche's side coming and making it difficult, being stubborn, being well organised defensively, and making Leicester's job harder than what many would expect, which is a Leicester 3 points?
Yeah, and that's the thing with Leicester. The more confident you are that Leicester are going to win easily, the more difficult it becomes. That's always been the case following Leicester. And this is the kind of fixture, the kind of opponent, which Leicester have struggled against in recent seasons. The team that will sit deep, they will not allow Vardy space in behind. They will frustrate Leicester, and Leicester will have to find a way to pass through them as opposed to just running in behind. Traditionally, that's the kind of opponent Leicester struggle against. However, it's also the kind of opponent that under Rodgers and with the likes of Tielemans and Maddison, they've now got more weapons to be able to pick apart defences like that. So I think it will be a very good test to see how far Leicester have come under Rodgers and building that kind of football. I'm confident that Leicester can get the win. I think it's going to be an emotional day as well, because Leicester are planning lots of things to mark the anniversary, or will be in a week's time, of the tragic helicopter crash that took the life of the chairman and four of the people in that helicopter. So there's lots of things planned to mark that, and that will be a hugely emotional occasion for lots of the players. So they'll be motivated to put on a performance for the late chairman. And for those who are there, they're putting thousands of fans will walk from the town centre to the match, pausing at the memorial site where the crash happened. And so it's going to be a huge day for Leicester, both on and off the field. And I think there's going to be a lot of emotions there and a lot of desire to get a victory, not only for the Premier League top four push, but also to mark the anniversary of the chairman's death.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, James. That was James Sharp, sports reporter for the Mail on Sunday. As he mentioned, it will be a rather emotional weekend for all involved at Leicester as they remember Vishay Srivanarapaba on the weekend. Obviously, that tragic helicopter accident that claimed his life and also the lives of four others. So it will be a very emotionally charged weekend for Leicester, and perhaps that game will be paled into insignificance as they remember obviously the great life of their chairman, their former chairman, that did so much for the club of Leicester, but also the city of Leicester as well. Make sure you keep getting in contact with us. Call us on 0208 7020 558. WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll be turning our attention to Newcastle next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll turn our attention back now to the Premier League and to talk all things Newcastle. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Aaron Stokes, Daily Star reporter on Newcastle. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Aaron. It was a 1-0 win, obviously, and it was all about Matty Longstaff in that game against Manchester United just before the international break. A new deal was being lined up for him after scoring on his Premier League debut, but it seems to be that his brother Sean, who was linked with Manchester United over the summer, seems to be stalling on a new deal.
Yeah, that looks to be the case at the minute, which is a shame, because obviously, you know, these are two players that Newcastle really should be, you know, striving to keep, you know. Both of them played fantastic against Manchester United. Sean, you know, shown over the last year how good he can be, and you know, it's no surprise that he's being linked with, you know, clubs like Man United. But I mean, you know, he's a local lad, so you've got to hope that, you know, he'll sort of decide to stay in the end. But obviously, when big clubs are coming in and luring and, you know, offering big types of money, then it's probably going to be hard to persuade him to stay. But I think everyone in Newcastle has obviously got their fingers crossed.
Why do you think, Aaron, we've seen such a difference in Newcastle's performances against the so-called bigger teams compared to the sides in and around them? Because you compare, for example, losing 3-1 away at Norwich, which was a terrible performance by the Magpies, and then they go to Tottenham and win 1-0. Is it simply a case of a sense of expectation, a pressure on Newcastle when they're playing sides in the bottom half of the table compared to against the bigger sides, where there isn't the expectation from everyone that Newcastle will get anything from these games?
Yeah, I think that, but there is a sense of truth in that. I mean, you know, Norwich away was a one where you were expecting to win early in the season, and that was a pretty abject performance. And then obviously Brighton and Watford at home, other games that Newcastle really should be looking to win. You know, there was just sort of no performance there. I think, you know, Rafa Benitez has set up a team to defend, and Steve Bruce has obviously pointed out that, you know, he's obviously came out in the press and said this team can't attack and it's more of a defensive team. And I think that's sort of why you see against the sort of bigger teams when, you know, Newcastle haven't got the ball and they're having to defend for large periods of the game, that actually it does sort of turn out that they get a better result out of it. Which obviously isn't what Newcastle fans want to hear. You know, they want a team that's going to attack and obviously be beating the teams against that are in and around them in the league. But it is obviously good that, you know, when the bigger clubs come to St James's and, you know, obviously Newcastle travel away to them, that there is always that expectation that they can nick a result like we've seen against Tottenham and Manchester United.
Obviously up next for Newcastle, we're going to get another interesting perspective of them when they travel to Chelsea on Saturday afternoon. Does it kind of suit Newcastle at the moment, this type of game? You'd say on paper, the way that Chelsea are playing at the moment, the front foot attacking style that they're going after at the moment, that they will probably easily win. But based on how Newcastle have played against the top six sides, being well organised, looking to play on the counter-attack, could this type of game could suit them absolutely down to the ground?
I think that's right, yeah. I think obviously, you know, nobody from Newcastle is expecting to go there and, you know, be on the front foot. There's probably going to be a lot of being camped in Chelsea's half and having to sort of try and keep them out. But like you say, you know, if they can spring a couple of counters and sort of show them what they did against Spurs and against Manchester United, then they're in with a chance. And I think what you've got to say is that Chelsea so far this season haven't been the best at the back. Obviously, I know that they've got some more players back in over the international break, but, you know, they haven't been solid at the back. And yes, they're good going forward, but I think there's a sort of vulnerability there where Newcastle sort of are at their best going forward, which we haven't sort of seen so far this season, then it might be a shock on the cards, to be fair.
One of the Newcastle players that's come under a little bit of fire, a bit of criticism, is Miguel Almiron, who was sent off again for Paraguay during this international break. He's yet to score a Premier League goal for Newcastle. Are there growing concerns from the Newcastle faithful that actually, even though it promised so much and that Rafa Benitez was back with the money to sign him in January, that he may not actually prove to be a really good signing?
The case for Almiron, it's a bit of a tough one because he shows in flashes that he does look like that he's a talented player. It just looks like he's never going to score a goal for Newcastle at the minute. You know, he just doesn't look confident once he gets in on goal. There's a hope that, you know, once he gets one, that they'll start to come. But like I say, at the minute, he just doesn't look confident enough in front of goal. What I would say is that, you know, people have obviously talked about how last season he had Rafa in charge and Rondon and Perez, two sort of, you know, Latin players next to him. And you felt like that was sort of, you know, advantageous for him. He sort of understood how to play. And he's obviously been sort of thrown into this Bruce side, maybe playing out of position with players he isn't sort of familiar with, and that's maybe down to it. I think there is a sense among Newcastle fans that it isn't going to work out. I know a lot of them are starting to maybe turn and sort of say, you know, why have we spent 20-odd million on this player from the MLS? Which is obviously all well and good and say in hindsight, but when he came, there was obviously a lot of excitement and people were, you know, happy with the signing. So, look, I think you've got to remember, he hasn't even been in the Premier League a year yet. It's a new league. He's still relatively young. You've just got to hope that with a bit of patience, and once he gets that first goal and, you know, that first assist, that he will turn out to be quite an important player for us.
So a quick prediction from you, Aaron. Chelsea against Newcastle at Stamford Bridge. Can Newcastle get anything from this game?
You know what? Based on the Spurs and Man United results, I'm going to go for, I think, 1-1. I think they'll nick a draw.
1-1. I'm sure producer Laurie will be delighted if Newcastle got a point. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Aaron. That was Aaron Stokes from the Daily Star. Quite a positive outlook on Newcastle's game. But you look at the games this season so far, Newcastle's better performances have come against the better sides. Now, well, Manchester United are pretty rubbish, so maybe that's not to say against a big side. But Tottenham away, they played very well and got all 3 points with that goal from Joe Linton. Away at my club, Liverpool, they actually put in a good performance. And at 2-1, Newcastle had chances to make it 2-2. And they were decent on that day, to be fair to Newcastle. Whereas the performances that have been shoddy have been the likes of that 3-1 defeat away at Norwich, where Newcastle were pretty terrible. That's perhaps an understatement to say how poor they were on that day. But you'd say on paper, Chelsea will probably win that game. But there's that onus on them that, for example, against Sheffield United, where Chelsea were 2-0 up, they took the foot off the pedal and drew 2-2. That Newcastle, I think, are more well suited to these types of games where they can sit back, look to play on the counter-attack. They need to make sure that the likes of Joe Linton don't get isolated up top, that it's just him against a back four. But actually, it's a game that suits them, and there's no pressure on Newcastle. They don't go to Chelsea with the onus on them to take the game to Chelsea to get all 3 points, and that, I think, will benefit for Newcastle. So it'll be an interesting prediction in our prediction section tomorrow as to see what producer Laurie goes with and what myself and Charlie both go with as well.
This is Love Sport.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.